Chapter 18. Colonel Grangerford was a gentleman, you see. He was a gentleman all over, and so was his family. He was well born, as the saying is, and that's worth as much in a man as it is in a horse, so the Widow Douglas said, and nobody ever denied that she was of the first aristocracy in our town. And Pap, he always said it too, though he warn't no more quality than a mudcat himself. Colonel Grangerford was very tall and very slim, and had a darkish paly complexion, not a sign of red in it anywheres. He was clean-shaved every morning, all over his thin face, and he had the thinnest kind of lips, and the thinnest kind of nostrils, and a high nose, and heavy eyebrows, and the blackest kind of eyes, sunk so deep back that they seemed like they was looking out of caverns at you, as you may say. His forehead was high, and his hair was black and straight, and hung to his shoulders. His hands was long and thin, and every day of his life he put on a clean shirt and a full suit from head to foot made out of linen so white it hurt your eyes to look at it. And on Sundays he wore a blue tailcoat with brass buttons on it. He carried a mahogany cane with a silver head to it. There warn't no frivolishness about him, not a bit, and he warn't ever loud. He was as kind as he could be. You could feel that, you know, and so you had confidence. Sometimes he smiled, and it was good to see. But when he straightened himself up like a liberty pole, and the lightning begun to flicker out from under his eyebrows, you wanted to climb a tree first, and find out what the matter was afterwards. He didn't ever have to tell anybody to mind their manners. Everybody was always good-mannered where he was. Everybody loved to have him around, too. He was sunshine most always. I mean, he made it seem like good weather. When he turned into a cloud bank, it was awful dark for a half a minute, and that was enough. There wouldn't nothing go wrong again for a week. When him and the old lady come down in the morning, all the family got up out of their chairs and gave them good day, and didn't sit down again till they had sat down. Then Tom and Bob went to the sideboard where the decanters was, and mixed a glass of bitters and handed it to him, and he held it in his hand and waited till Tom's and Bob's was mixed, and then they bowed and said, "Our duty to you, sir and madam," and they bowed the least bit in the world and said, "Thank you." And so they drank, all three. And Bob and Tom poured a spoonful of water on the sugar and the mite of whiskey or apple brandy in the bottom of their tumblers and give it to me and Buck, and we drank to the old people, too. Bob was the oldest and Tom next. Tall, beautiful men with very broad shoulders and brown faces and long black hair and black eyes. They dressed in white linen from head to foot like the old gentleman and wore broad Panama hats. Then there was Miss Charlotte. She was 25, and tall and proud and grand, but as good as she could be when she warn't stirred up. But when she was, she had a look that would make you wilt in your tracks like her father. She was beautiful. So was her sister, Miss Sophia, but it was a different kind. She was gentle and sweet like a dove, and she was only 20. Each person had their own nigger to wait on them. Buck, too. My nigger had a monstrous easy time because I weren't used to having anybody do anything for me, but Buck's was on the jump most of the time. This was all there was of the family now, but there used to be more. Three sons. They got killed, and Emmeline that died. The old gentleman owned a lot of farms and over 100 niggers. Sometimes a stack of people would come there, horseback, from 10 or 15 mile around and stay 5 or 6 days, and have such junketings round about and on the river, and dances and picnics in the woods daytimes, and balls at the house nights. These people was mostly kinfolks of the family. The men brought their guns with them. It was a handsome lot of quality, I tell you. There was another clan of aristocracy around there, 5 or 6 families, mostly of the name of Shepherdson. They was as high-toned and well-born and rich and grand as the tribe of Grangerfords. The Shepherdsons and the Grangerfords used the same steamboat landing, which was about 2 mile above our house. So sometimes when I went up there with a lot of our folks, I used to see a lot of the Shepherdsons there on their fine horses. One day Buck and me was away out in the woods hunting and heard a horse coming. We was crossing the road. Buck says, "Quick, jump for the woods!" We done it and then peeped down the woods through the leaves. Pretty soon a splendid young man come galloping down the road, setting his horse easy and looking like a soldier. He had his gun across his pommel. I'd seen him before. It was young Harney Shepherdson. I heard Buck's gun go off at my ear and Harney's hat tumbled off from his head. He grabbed his gun and rode straight to the place where we was hid. But we didn't wait. We started through the woods on a run. The woods weren't thick, so I looked over my shoulder to dodge the bullet, and twice I seen Harney cover Buck with his gun. And then he rode away the way he come, to get his hat, I reckon, but I couldn't see. We never stopped running till we got home. The old gentleman's eyes blazed a minute. 'Twas pleasure mainly, I judged. Then his face sort of smoothed down, and he says kind of gentle, "I don't like that shooting from behind a bush. Why didn't you step into the road, my boy?"
"The Shepherdsons don't, Father. They always take advantage."
Miss Charlotte, she held her head up like a queen while Buck was telling his tale, and her nostrils spread and her eyes snapped. The two young men looked dark, but never said nothing. Miss Sophia turned pale, but the color come back when she found the man warn't hurt. Soon as I could get Buck down by the corn cribs under the trees by ourselves, I says, "Did you want to kill him, Buck?"
"Well, I bet I did."
"What did he do to you?"
"Him? He never done nothing to me."
"Well, then what did you want to kill him for?"
"Why, nothing, only it's on account of the feud."
"What's a feud?"
"Why, where was you raised? Don't you know what a feud is?"
"Never heard of it before. Tell me about it."
"Well," says Buck, "a feud is this way. A man has a quarrel with another man and kills him. Then that other man's brother kills him. Then the other brothers on both sides goes for one another. Then the cousins chip in, and by and by everybody's killed off and there ain't no more feud. But it's kind of slow and takes a long time."
"Has this one been going on long, Buck?"
"Well, I should reckon. It started 30 years ago or summer's long there. There was trouble about something and then a lawsuit to settle it, and the suit went agin one of the men, and so he up and shot the man that won the suit, which he would naturally do, of course, anybody would."
"What was the trouble about, Buck? Land?"
"I reckon, maybe. I don't know."
"Well, who done the shooting? Was it a Grangerford or a Shepherdson?"
"Laws, how do I know? It was so long ago."
"Don't anybody know?"
"Oh, yes, Pa knows, I reckon, and some of the other old folks. But they don't know now what the row was about in the first place."
"Has there been many killed, Buck?"
"Yes, right smart chance of funerals. But they don't always kill. Pa's got a few buckshot in him, but he don't mind it 'cause he don't weigh much anyway. Bob's been carved up some with a bowie, and Tom's been hurt once or twice."
"Has anybody been killed this year, Buck?"
"Yes, we got one and they got one. About 3 months ago, my cousin Bud, 14-year-old, was riding through the woods on t'other side of the river and didn't have no weapon with him, which was blame foolishness. And in a lonesome place, he hears a horse a-coming behind him and sees old Baldy Shepherdson a-linking after him with his gun in his hand and his white hair a-flying in the wind. Instead of jumping off and taking to the brush, Bud allowed he could outrun him. So they had it nip and tuck for 5 mile or more, the old man a-gaining all the time. So at last Bud seen it warn't any use, so he stopped and faced around so as to have the bullet holes in front, you know, and the old man he rode up and shot him down. But he didn't get much chance to enjoy his luck, for inside of a week our folks laid him out."
"I reckon that old man was a coward, Buck."
"I reckon he warn't a coward, not by blame sight. There ain't a coward amongst them Shepherdsons, not a one. And there ain't no cowards amongst the Grangerfords either. Why, that old man kept up his end in a fight one day for a half an hour against 3 Grangerfords and come out winner. They was all a horseback. He lit off of his horse and got behind a little wood pile and kept his horse before him to stop the bullets. But the Grangerfords stayed on their horses and capered around the old man and peppered away at him, and he peppered away at them. Him and his horse both went home pretty leaky and crippled, but the Grangerfords had to be fetched home, and one of them was dead and another died the next day. No, sir, if a body's out hunting for cowards, he don't want to fool away any time amongst them Shepherdsons, because they don't breed any of that kind." Next Sunday, we all went to church, about 3 mile, everybody a horseback. The men took their guns along, so did Buck, and kept them between their knees or stood them handy against the wall. The Shepherdsons done the same. It was pretty ornery preaching, all about brotherly love and such like tiresomeness. But everybody said it was a good sermon, and they all talked it over going home and had such a powerful lot to say about faith and good works and free grace and pre-foreordestination and I don't know what all, that it did seem to me to be one of the roughest Sundays I had run across yet.